This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to Popcast Your Luck.
Popcast Your
Luck. Wow. Starting off strong.
It's early for you.
It is early. I did fall asleep before 3 a.m. though. So that's, yeah. Like I'm practically fully rested. Okay. Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your dirty rock of weekly culture review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
It is the beginning of the holiday season. It's early holiday. We are coming with a mailbag episode this week. So when you are home with your families and you wish to maybe not speak to your families, maybe throw on youtube.com/popcast, especially get involved. We have a new channel. Subscribe. Should people subscribe to the channel?
youtube.com/popcast. Like and subscribe.
Active. It's active right now. So this week, we're taking questions. We're taking questions from email. We're taking questions from the Discord. And for the first time ever, we're taking questions from the voicemail. I'm not going to lie.
Are you nervous?
I don't know if anxious more than nervous. I feel like it's like we've opened a portal. Mm-hmm. And I know like other shows do this, mm-hmm. but we have not historically mm-hmm. done this. So like we've opened a portal. I don't know what's on the other side of it. I'm a little bit concerned.
We're going full morning zoo.
Joey Animals.
It's our destiny.
Okay, good. So we're going to come up with our morning zoo names. I do want to point out there's a Popcast Deluxe cake, a funfetti cake. Yes. That is not to give away too much, but that's the snack this week.
Yeah.
Made by our senior producer, Sawyer. Okay.
Yeah. John's first real funfetti after the funfetti popcorn that we ate.
Before we get into the questions, I just want to, there was one direct communique to me that I just wanted to share, speaking of snacks, and then we'll get into the questions. Over the weekend, I was on the phone with a friend of the show, Rob Harvilla, great music writer, great podcast host. And Rob just wanted to let me know that the most fun minute of cultural consumption that he has every week is he listens to the audio version of Deluxe and listens to us eat snacks without watching us eat snacks.
I think a lot of people do that.
But he said, I shouldn't do a Rob impression, but he basically just said it was so enjoyable to hear us opening packaging. I mean, obviously ASMR is a thing, we get it, but to hear us specifically opening the packaging and go, So he really enjoys that. So Rob, we thank you. And we encourage everybody, if you're into that kind of thing, it's usually 5 minutes before the end of the episode. So
it's funny because I think this stands out most to other podcasters because Lindsay Weber, another friend of the show, Lindsay of Who Weekly, who's been on podcast before, she also commented being like, I can't believe you guys get away with eating on a podcast. I'm like, get away with.
Yeah, that's
like, I don't know. I'm like,
such harsh language. Such harsh language. Get away with like encouraging each other to perhaps there's more inclusive and embracing language that you could choose. I don't know. I don't think of it in those terms.
All right. Stick around for the snack that comes at the end of the episode.
So here's what we're going to do. We've got the voicemail questions. We've got the Discord questions and the email questions. We're going to start out with the voicemail questions. Pat's here today. Pat's press and play.
Pat's running the phones.
Yes. He's truly manning the boards. Yeah. So we have not heard any of the audio recordings.
We're doing this in real time.
I pray that our faces maintain calm during this thing. Let's go. As they say, we'll do it live.
Hey, John and Joe. This is William again. This is about the Beatles song, Now and Then. John Perales' piece about it in the Times, I think, was a really balanced way of talking about how it's a very nostalgic song for Beatles sound of old. I also read Bob Lefsetz's take on it.
Wow.
And absolutely lost it when he said that the song was trash and that Lennon would have hated it. And I think I'm of a similar belief. And it just made me think about whether advancements in technology to be able to strip old content, to repurpose in the new content, mixed with generative abilities to create things off of previous training data and assets. What's this going to mean for like how estates think about music and how to preserve legacies?
Okay, so a couple of things. One, protect Bob Lefsetz.
Yes.
Absolutely protect Bob Lefsetz. Number two, that started as a question about a thing I care nothing about.
The new Beatles song.
And ended with a thing that I care quite a bit about. You want to give the facts first, or do we want to reenact me watching that for the first time about 20 minutes ago?
So
give the facts
first. Yeah, Now and Then came out a couple weeks ago now, billed as the last Beatles song. Came from
a threat.
Yeah. Threat. And now they're like, well, maybe not really. We could gin up some more of these. Came from a demo that Lennon recorded at the Dakota in the late 70s before he was killed. Yoko gave the tape to the remaining Beatles in the 90s, George, Paul, and Ringo. They did a little bit of work on it. They put out two of the songs from the demo as part of the greatest hits package around that time, the anthologies. And there was this one that they couldn't quite get the sound quality right on.
And that matters.
That's Now and Then.
That matters.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they had to save something for when they wanted to re-release the greatest hits package. Eventually, using the technology that Peter Jackson used for Get Back, the Disney Plus documentary, where they were able to like separate a lot of the strands of conversation.
Yeah, I love that you're saying music. All this with a straight face.
Look,
literally a straight face.
As if
every part of this is totally normal and totally worthwhile.
Anyway, they returned to this using the new technology, which Paul called AI, which really freaked people out about because they thought, when people hear AI, this part is important because there is a distinction. When people hear AI, they think created by computers.
That is, yes.
That it's somebody mimicking, somebody basically putting words into the mouth of John Lennon. This is not what happened here. They used technology to separate the vocal on the piano track so they could mix it better. Then they added a bunch of other stuff. So they took some of George's old guitar stuff. They recorded some new stuff. They brought in...
So it's like a Survivor puzzle.
Yeah. Yes. It's Frankenstein for sure. But the weirdest thing they did...
Did DJ Mandy produce it?
The weirdest thing they did was they made this music video for it.
Okay. So right before... Okay. So look, a couple of things. One, I've basically been on vacation for a couple of weeks, although the fact that I'm sitting in this chair seems to belie that. But anyway, basically been on vacation. But even if I was working my normal 12-hour days,
you would have ignored.
The odds that I would have engaged with this content are low. But in the spirit of studying up 20 minutes before we recorded, I really wish we could flash back to me watching this for the first time.
Yeah.
This is not simply heretical, but also hilarious. Yes. This is who signed off on, like, genuinely, like a couple weeks ago, we talked about Priscilla and we talked about the rights issues and who has the right. Like, this is why you have rights control, to say no to some of this stuff.
Everybody said yes.
This is... Absolutely.
Except it's John.
It's bonkers. It's bonkers that this exists. Do you want to play some of this absolutely bizarre side-by-side footage of
them dancing with hologram John Lennon? I mean, the meme potential is rich. This is like, you know, when you're seeing AI art now on social media and it's like Obama as Ice Spice.
Yeah.
For instance,
I would define Munch as like just an eater or somebody that's like obsessed with you, or it could be a hater. Either way, they still obsessed with you.
Like, this is so much crazier than anything happening like on weird Twitter or the dark web. Like the fact 100 that this
grand
is like
of Chanel.
Like this is this is real professional Beatles content, and it looks like
it looks worse than the average. It looks worse than this. Show.
It looks worse than podcast.
And we look great. This is not a shot on us. No, or anyone.
But it's the Beatles.
It's the Beatles. This literally. This is like a $1 billion enterprise, or at least a 9-figure enterprise. And it literally, like, you could have given this to like one YouTuber who has like 8,000 subscribers and be like, yo, like, punch this up a little bit and it would be better.
Yeah.
Okay. Beatles are fine. This.
The Beatles are fine.
The Beatles are fine.
John Caramonica.
The Beatles are fine. This thing. I don't believe, I'm not of the mindset that like one piece of art/content can sink an entire person's career. Like that is not like, obviously we're not talking about cancellation, but I don't think
this
that
is legacy ruining.
Yeah. I don't, but it is, it is absurd. If you think about it as the first piece of Beatles content that maybe an entire new generation is going to encounter them via. If you're thinking,
you're imagining like a 9-year-old on YouTube happening upon the Now and Then video.
Seriously.
But they would be like,
it has the quality of most children's television.
They would be like, just George looks cool.
Don't George is
throughout the eras.
George literally never had a bad hairstyle.
It's true.
Never had bad hair. I absolutely respect the hair. Maybe kids would like it because it genuinely does look like most content on like Nicktoons.
Is this what Cocomelon is like? I don't know what Cocomelon
is. I don't know what that looks like. but it does look like content made for children.
Yeah.
And then the footage on the back end of John being like. it's almost like, so the song is, you told me it's written by John. It's a
John song.
So it's written by John, but in the video, there's old footage of John essentially meta making fun of everybody else in the video because they're so sober and serious. And he's just like, I'm having a wacky old time.
Yeah.
Why? What's the why? Why? Like, genuinely, what's the why?
Money. I know.
I watch this and I watch $100 bills flying out the window.
We looked it up, actually. The Lennons, the Ono Lennon family kept the publishing on this. So, you know, Shaw, I guess it was Sean's like paying for his next yacht. I don't know.
Wow. Have you been on Sean's other yacht? I'm not on that yacht. This is, okay, so. I feel like I say this sometimes and it feels like I say it cheaply, but I don't mean it cheaply. Like, this shouldn't exist.
Yeah, I don't.
It doesn't enhance the Beatles legacy. It doesn't add anything. I'm sure there's some like deep Beatles scholar who's going to say this fills a hole in like some thing about Lennon. So look, I'm not dismissing. I'm not dismissing if you have spent your entire career on Beatlesology and like you see where this fits in the like, great. More power.
Here's where it fits. It doesn't. It was written after the Beatles broke up. It's not a Beatles song.
Ayo.
It's not a Beatles song.
Yeah. That's y'all.
It's a John Lennon solo song featuring the corpse of George Harrison, the estate. And Paul and Ringo with goofing around.
It's the fact that the footage, Paul, there's 90s footage that's video footage, and then there's I presume 2023 footage that's video footage. Paul's got the same hairstyle but different colors.
Yeah,
but I
okay, but what about
a bigger question?
Yeah, what about like what this means for what
for sexy, like sexy red soundboard?
Yeah, I mean,
in
like
2075
we could have an actually AI generate, like you could have the 10 best rappers in the world write songs and make them sound like Tupac songs and release it as a posthumous Tupac album. You into that?
No. But maybe the question is, why would anybody be into? Because this is something we learned over the last 12 months. We learned this with Ghostwriter. We learned this with other folks making songs, like Kanye voice songs covering country music or whatever. These are incredibly fun as novelty. We are a far way away from something that's very serious and potentially like disruptive. Like there was the kid Zubin we talked about. That was maybe like the closest that I think that we encountered of totally new lyrics in a famous person's voice and cadence that sounded maybe kind of credible.
Sure.
I'm sure there's literally, as we speak, hundreds of these being uploaded online that we haven't heard yet. I haven't felt the threat level yet. We are saying, in essence, professional songwriters or professional rappers setting out on this task.
Or like finishing. I mean, we've had this. Like, you have Tupac albums that got finished after he died. You have Pop Smoke albums that got finished after he died. Yes. Like, the technology is there to finish left behind stuff like this Lennon demo. I think leave it alone, release it as is, maybe. I don't know. There's some, like, there's a version of this where you collaborating with a deceased artist that you had a relationship with.
Well, Natalie Cole's Unforgettable. A very important song that's also a good song. That's fine. I think that's fine, but it doesn't, I don't know a lot about the backstory. That was also 25 or 30 years ago.
Right.
I don't know how much fixing or treatment on the Nat King Cole vocals there were. Right. I've got to assume there wasn't that much technology at that time.
Of someone like Arthur Russell, who most of the output is posthumous in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, there is a way to do this tastefully. I think that's mostly what's missing here in the Beatles version, is that it is not tasteful and it is not in the spirit of Lennon. And it's not even in the spirit of the song itself, which is obviously like seems to be written as a romance song. But then because of the video and the pomp and circumstance, they make it seem like it's about the end of the Beatles.
Yes.
But which is like really gross.
But maybe there's a larger lesson in here about all culture, which is first as culture, then as meme. Right? Like, everything is in essence raw material destined to be remixed, altered, addended by someone with intentions that don't have anything to do with the intention of the original artist. And obviously you see this in meme culture, you see this in this kind of music production. I wonder if all of that tier two content is fundamentally absurd. And maybe this video, by being as ding-dongy as it is actually, maybe there's someone on Team Beatles who's like, let's make this as ridiculous as possible. Maybe we fell for it because we expected it to be serious or some or sober in some way. But on their end, they were just like, no, let's make it a little bit goofy.
But it's really hard coming on the back of the actual Peter Jackson documentary, Get Back, which took, which essentially remixed and using new technology, reassembled existing footage that had already been made into a documentary and created something that actually did fit as a missing piece. Like, it changed the narrative of the breakup of the Beatles. You saw stuff you'd never seen. You saw interactions with them. Like, it's an incredible achievement and piece of content using new forms of technology.
If you say so.
Whether or not you love the Beatles, like, you can't come away from watching that and not think that it is like additive, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get something like this, which is just like, I mean, like you saw.
And forgive me, it's connected to like a reissue of some kind?
Or? Yeah, they're putting out the Greatest Hits box sets all over again with a new song. So, happy holidays. Buy this for your dad.
Move. Truly, I mean this with all my, I'm saying with my chest. Moving on.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Let's get another question.
Yeah.
I'm a grad student at IU Bloomington, and a couple of my friends are involved in a Taylor Swift conference that we're holding next week called Taylor Swift, the Conference Era. And my question is, well, you've got two choices. One is come up with either a panel or a convoluted paper title that you would submit to this conference, or if you have the time, take a look at the conference listings and react to some of the titles you see. All right, keep on keeping on.
Okay, so my first thought is, why are we not invited to the conference?
I know. Well, somebody is, like, screwed up.
Really weird.
Who does PR for this universe?
For the IU Bloomington Taylor Swift conference. So to answer the first question, yes, we would have come.
Yeah.
Like, duh?
Yeah.
Like, genuinely?
Yeah.
Like, weird.
Offended.
Truly.
You spent more time in academia than I. So I feel like you probably have a richer satire voice for
just for the record. Okay, this just took
conference
place.
Titles?
It took place.
Oh, already. It happened. Okay. Yes. All right.
But still.
Well, I still feel left out.
Maybe the thing we should say is if you are doing another one of these,
yeah,
we're here.
Yeah.
I did spend a lot of time. So I feel like I occasionally talked about this, but like before I was a full-time music writer or music critic, I spent 2 years in a PhD program in the late 90s.
In London.
Thank you. Does it count if Joe says it? And so I went to some of these conferences. And actually, I will say, in the late 90s, we did not,
there was no self-awareness.
Well, no. There was no conference about what was popular in that specific moment. Everybody, you know, like, I was, like, delivering papers on hip-hop, and that seemed, there were not that many people.
Right.
You know, you go to one of these conferences, and everybody was doing Beatles papers, basically.
Sure.
So I consider it a form of progress that this happens, and it's happening in real time. Also, I say this with all due self-awareness, sometimes kids just want to write about papers or whatever they're listening to. Like, yeah. Can you imagine the number of, like, V's papers that professors are being subjected to, like, right now, this semester? We apologize.
Like, V's as Shakespearean. Something.
I'm sorry. I like, you know, again, I like all that stuff, but...
But it's better than another Beatles paper.
What's that?
Better than another Beatles paper.
Unless it's about this ding dong.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we should read
the title. Hit me with a couple.
Yeah, because I think the question, like, this seems to be maybe from an English department
or
Center for Public Arts and Humanities. I think the real thing is, should this be at the business school?
Mm-hmm.
That's the real.
It's good.
Maybe like one day with the PhD kids and one day with the MBA kids.
Would you do a whole lecture on the Capital One tie-ins?
Cap One should sponsor it, to be honest. Okay, I'm gonna float a couple
titles. They don't sponsor us, for the record.
No. I'm gonna float a couple titles. Make the Friendship Bracelets, in quotes. Aesthetic Jurisdiction, Parasocial Engagement, and Negative Space Intellectual Property in the Taylor Swift Fandom.
I think we had a segment on that a couple of episodes
that's
ago.
True. First of all, home run name. I do miss being in grad school and knowing the exact precise rhythm of a paper title. So good.
Yeah.
I had so many of these when I was in grad school. This feels like home to me. Friendship Bracelet, like I would say, great.
Yeah.
I also feel like I recently was offered a friendship bracelet, and I'm going to placehold that. I think that's good. What do you think about aesthetic jurisdiction? What's that, three to five?
Yeah. I have a lot to learn.
Parasocial engagement, you know, negative space intellectual property. I'd like to know more about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
Is it like, meaning like DIY merch?
I don't know. Negative space is what's not there.
Sure.
This is like, I did drop out of grad school. I just want to clarify. I did drop out. Shout out Paul Gilroy, though. I love you and I miss you, but I did drop out of grad school.
All right. Hit me with another one, though.
Yeah.
I need to get the wheels turning for my own title.
Quote, would you have me? Would you want me? Colon, queer temporality and the politics of belonging in Taylor Swift's Teenage Love Triangle trilogy.
Ooh, this one's good.
That's good.
First of all, Betty, we could go deep. We could definitely write a University Press book about Betty itself.
Okay, so like, first of all, this, also I want to say we're not dragging any of these. Like, this is like, I know like there's like a version of this where we're like, we can't believe it. No. This is like, we want to be here.
Yeah.
We want to hang out. This seems right up our alley.
Yeah.
There's also probably like 9 tumblers that did this work like 7 years ago.
The fan fiction.
Like no shots.
Yeah, the fan fiction.
And game. Maybe this draws from those tumblers.
I'm sure.
A faith forgotten land. Escapism through the lens of intertextuality and Lacanian ideals in Taylor Swift's folklore.
Wow.
2 things I didn't get through. Taylor Swift's folklore and Lacan. Respectfully. No, I've read both of those. But I wish not to revisit them. Look, if Lacan can explain folklore to me, that would be great. That's phenomenal.
You got any of your own?
That I'm just
cooking
like,
up
a freestyle one?
Yeah.
I don't know if I could freestyle. These are, this is like,
I know this is, there's a lot of work that went into these. Work. I'm thinking a little bit about,
oh, I got one for you.
All right. Hit me.
Safe space or marketing scheme? ? Taylor Swift's cultivation of parasocial relationships in her Tumblr era, 2014 to 2020.
If I'm not cited.
That's dead ass. Dead ass.
Both my Tumblr and my article that's about true. Taylor Swift's relationship with really? Tumblr should be cited in this paper.
I'm so mad. Why weren't we here? Do you think that they would have been mad? Do you think they're mad at me about folklore?
Yes. Yes.
All right. I feel like
here's what I got cooking up.
You already did one. Okay, great.
Only bought this dress to take it off. Sartorial imagery over the years in the Taylor Swift catalog.
Wow. It's really good.
Both clothes she's mentioned in songs. You could do, I mean, the scarf alone, the All Too Well scarf alone is, that's 20 pages right there. Yeah. I think going back to our conversation about Taylor Swift's aesthetic over the years, I think both her use of, I mean, the cardigans, the new cardigans.
Oh, yeah. Baby blue.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah, lots to dissect, I think. So that's where I'm going.
Man, I'm going Tim McGraw because, you know, I'm always going Tim McGraw when it's Taylor time. A tendency of getting stuck. The limitations of masculinity in the Taylor Swift oeuvre.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's good, right? Right. Yeah.
Give us a couple of years. We'll be
literally call us.
Yeah.
And literally, I'm so sad.
We'll be at the next one.
I'm genuinely so sad. We would like to be there. Maybe we could do someone from NPR gave a keynote.
They probably liked folklore. Call me.
Hard pass.
Call me.
Later for y'all. All right. Next.
Hey, John and Joe, this is Jack, and I have a question about minimalism. John, I know you're not a huge fan of Carolyn Polachek. Her new single, Dang, is a lot of things, but the word that jumps out to me is spare. She does a lot of work to draw our attention to each of the individual production elements. Charlie XCX famously predicted on Twitter this summer that, quote, over the next year, pop music will be way more minimal sounding, quote, like 3 to 4 sounds per song plus vocal. So the question is, do you guys think this prediction has any legs? In the long wake of Sophie's death, are there other artists clearly taking up the mantle of spare, minimal art pop? And when a good song is so simple, does it lend an air of mythical alchemy? Or do you think it just makes people say, hey, I could do that?
Okay, really interesting question.
Minimalism and pop. Is this new? Are we on a new wave of minimalism?
Maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm entertaining this for the first time. Maybe it's not minimalism in the classic sense. Like when I think of the worst excesses of big tent pop, I'm thinking Katy and I'm thinking Lady Gaga, late 2000s, early 2010s, just throw everything at it and see what sticks. Katy especially.
I also think there's a Kanye element here where it's like
post-Yeezus?
Well, yeah, I would say like he went all the way
like on Fantasy.
Twisted Fantasy, yeah. You know, they were stacking 200 tracks on top of each other, backup vocal on top of backup vocal, then stripping way down with what came after. I am a god. And I think, like, the long tail is actually still more Twisted Fantasy than it is Yeezus. Like, I don't think Yeezus, like, we might still be catching up to the influence of Yeezus today.
Let me ask this, though. How much of this is about the ease of production and the ease of distribution? Like, on some level, is this not just an inevitability, given that much more music is being made than ever before? More of it is probably being made by younger people with access to technology who can make relatively simple songs that get out and get heard quite widely, quite quickly.
I do think it's that, but I think it's a pendulum swing where at first the novelty of being able to stack dozens, hundreds of sounds on top of each other without leaving your computer was worth pursuing. And now people are like, but let's get back to the real meat and let's strip down. Like, if we can do everything, why don't we do nothing? That I could see as like a pendulum swing of production.
Also, no one makes mainstream pop anymore. Sorry, regret. Yes.
We've been through it.
We've been through this.
It's true.
Except Jungkook.
Should we take another one?
Yeah. Let's pivot to Discord and email questions.
Sure.
So this one is from the Discord from Tsukishima. It says, here's a question inspired by the Noakon app. If you believe authenticity is a sham, why are you bothered when the costume is a banjo and suspenders, but not when it's a meat dress? What's the ideological resistance to the Lumineers posturing? False contrast.
Interesting idea.
Interesting idea, false con. I've never said how I felt about the meat dress. So it's not as if I'm saying one is good and one's bad. So maybe there's two parts, even though it's a short question. Like, one is, what do I think of the meat dress and what do I think about costuming in general? And two, why do I think Lumineers is particularly bad? Costume is part of any essential pop star presentation in any genre. Any person that you like who makes music and has an audience is costuming themselves in some way.
You're wearing your little baby costume.
I am wearing my little baby costume today. So costuming inherently doesn't bother me.
My sense of this question was is less about the costuming itself than the concept of authenticity versus artificiality. Are they saying that
if I believe authenticity is a sham,
then the costume, the artificiality of, let's just say it, white authenticity, I think they're saying you've been more allergic to in the dressing up as authentic as opposed to dressing up as artificial. Both are artificial.
They're both artificial. Is it wrong to say that the Lumineers costuming, and I don't mean to just talk about the Lumineers specifically, but like the clothes that look like the clothes that people wore on steamships in the early 1900s, but actually cost like $900.
Right.
Like the kind of store.
Mixologist clothes.
Yeah. Like the kind of like handlebar mustache vibes.
Yeah.
When I see costumes like that, this kind of like rural, like,
It's a certain kind of dog whistle.
Like just came back from war, rural cosplay, like 1920s. What it says is this is a safe place for
whiteness,
old ideas about whiteness, like not contemporary ideas, which are maybe not that different, but it's certainly a little bit more evolved than what was happening then. And I think in terms of audience, what it's telegraphing is if you want to feel like there is nothing here that won't feel rooted, ancestral in some way, this is a place for you. Whereas I think what Lady Gaga is trying to do is saying, if you can imagine something that's in the future, that lives in an unknown artistic realm, this is a home for you. I'm probably inherently going to be more skeptical of the retrograde idea than of the futuristic idea, even if fundamentally they are both costumes.
Yes, I think this is the answer, is that we make our decisions aesthetically and it's not actually about authenticity versus artificiality. And it's more like, what is being telegraphed here? And do we just like the vibe and the music, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe this goes into the next question, which kind of touches on this. And it's not, the answer is not that dissimilar. This is from Julie, too. Hi there. Been a frequent listener of Popcast and Deluxe this year. It seems like every other episode, John mentions his disdain for Mumford.
They're counting, by the way, how many times you've mentioned seeing Mumford live.
How many times have I mentioned
this? At least three.
Seriously?
To the Facebook group.
Well, now four. He has also not so subtly hinted that he does not like Brandi Carlile and other artists with a similar sound like the Lumineers, Noah Cobb. This, wow. We're in a dark era.
You did apologize to Brandi Carlile on Popcast.
I did.
Yeah.
Could John please explain why he doesn't like these artists and or their music? Personally, I was always mad about Mumford & Sons, but I've enjoyed the others quite a bit. Thank you. Yes. It's time to talk about it. Okay. I should say the gesture that a lot of these groups or artists embody is a gesture that I am skeptical about across genres. I'm skeptical of retrograde. I'm skeptical of reenactors.
That's, loaded word, but purposefully.
Yes, so. Like that to me is. It's not that a great album or song couldn't come out of that idea, but as a critic and as a listener, I'm constantly hearing or wanting to hear something that surprises me, something that I haven't heard before. Something that feels novel, intriguing, an unexpected juxtaposition of ideas or sounds. And a lot of this music, and this is why I think the four-letter word that we're not saying here is Americana. A lot of that music exists only to fill holes that are already there. You know what the size of the sound is. You know what the idea of the sound is. You know what the sonic range of the sound is. How do we essentially create new paintings that fit in that same frame? That to me is not an exciting approach to music. Again, there's plenty of music in that category or in that space that I think is like on its own. It's good music, but it's not what I'm drawn to. It's not what I'm drawn to ideologically. It doesn't mean I can't have a nice night listening to some of that music at a concert or on an album. Not going to be here like, don't listen to Lucinda Williams, you know, like listen to Lucinda Williams, you know,
yeah.
There's plenty of people in that world who do great music, but as a category of music, I find it incredibly hard to not just relate to, but also feel passionate about. And I think the kind of side by side with that, like I haven't written a lot about Griselda, for example.
I was going to say you like Joey Badass.
Yeah. No, like I haven't written a lot about Griselda. And it's not because I don't like Griselda. It's not because I don't like Benny the Butcher record. It's that I don't know that it does contribute new thoughts to the overall thing that we're doing here. It's an incredibly high level, very gifted execution of an idea that happens to also be very close to the idea of the music that I was so passionate about in the late 80s and the 90s and early 2000s. And that's, again, I don't mean it as a knock, but as far as what I do, I'm a one person with limited bandwidth and a very specifically tuned ear. If I'm going to fill that ear with stuff, I would much rather fill it with stuff that is surprising and unexpected. Oftentimes, I will listen to a record that is universally acclaimed that falls in this category, and I can hear why people like it, but I also hear at the same time, there's nothing for me to like put my fingers onto and really grip onto. So that to me, I think if you pick up over the months and the years and decade, are we coming up on a decade? I should figure out when I took over Popcast. Are we coming up on a decade?
Yikes.
We're gonna have to do another cake.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you've picked up on that thread, what you're picking up on is not necessarily an indictment of any of these individual artists, although I do think the Lumineers are not that good. But like what you're picking up on is an indictment of an idea, of a limitation, of people who wake up, go into a room and make music and they already know what the shape of it is. That to me is what I struggle with.
This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Okay, this is probably the last real question. We got a couple comments I'm going to share at the end, but a couple,
those are this is really more of a comment.
This is yes, fair. So this is from the Discord. This is from Carmod Camille Mod, which I think is one of the moderators in the Discord.
Thank you for your service.
Yes. This is a great question or thought. I was thinking about it a bit before the latest episode was released, but following the passings of Jimmy Buffett and Steve Harwell from Smash Mouth, RIP, X2. Both of them were often reduced to punchlines and alternately fought and leaned in to their caricatures. So my query is, once an artist has been cast in a specific role and deemed as one-dimensional or a novelty, how can they escape that stigma? Can they do it? Should they do it? The tributes I've read and heard to those two, mostly Buffett, have had an agenda of either finding depth and variation in their work or of celebrating the pleasure their main shticks brought to a dedicated following. Both aspects are revered now, but maybe weren't that much during their lives. This is real. It's real media criticism hours here.
It's good.
Really good. I'm also thinking about Lil Yachty's psychedelic turn earlier this year and Doja Cat's current focus on bars over hooks. They apparently felt they had something to prove, but is that a good instinct for artists to have? And how long can this proof actually stand? Two parts of the question. I'm probably more interested in the first part. Let's maybe table the Yachty Doja thing, because I think you want to allow artists in their time to evolve and change. I will say one thing about the Beatles video. I should have said this when we were playing the Beatles video. That band looked different. Literally every like 30 minutes, they were a different looking band and they were a different sounding band. Unlike U2, who I went and saw at the Sphere. And if you had told me that that was just like a U2 hologram from like a 1993 concert, I would have just said totally credible.
Whereas you can't get the Beatles to align right.
Literally, even within eras, they're fighting. Anyway, artists should be allowed to evolve. If Yachty wants to make a psychedelic record, he's more than entitled to.
But I think that the question asker is correct that a lot of artists do the shift because of a chip on their shoulder.
A perception.
Developed because they've been made into a shtick or because they made themselves into a shtick.
I know I've done public service announcements before. I'm not going to do a whole thing, but I do want to say this. You do not have to work with the guy from Tame Impala.
Mm.
Like, you just don't have to. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to.
Actually,
you know what's an avant-garde Lil Yachty record? Michigan Boat Boy.
Yeah.
Do that. It's great. Anyway, I'm interested in the media criticism of this. And this is something that we are aware of. Like, we are in the ecosystem of paying tribute to people, obituary writing, appraisal writing for me as a critic. This is perverse, but oftentimes after someone dies, whoever they are, complexity is actually not what's favored discursively. Mm-hmm. It's not what's favored.
There's like two or three points that everyone latches on
to. Yeah. And there's also like an urgency in the contemporary media writing ecosystem to have a take and have it be very quick.
Yeah.
And I think the two kinds of takes that this writer is asking about are both what I would refer to perhaps a little derisively as day one takes.
Sure. Either this artist is way more complex than you initially thought.
Gave them credit for.
Or
hey, maybe they weren't that complex, but boy, people sure did.
Love the shtick.
Yeah. And I share this observation. I share perceived frustration with it. Now, that said, where were those pieces about Jimmy Buffett when Jimmy Buffett was alive? Like, was anybody, I mean, I don't know. I'm not familiar with like the complete oeuvre of Buffett writing, but like, were people writing those pieces when he was alive?
Taking his work seriously.
Obviously, like, people are like, everybody loves Jimmy, his fans, parrot heads love Jimmy Buffett. Like, that's established. But in terms of like taking him seriously, was that part of the coverage?
There's no market. Like, if we're going to continue along the media criticism track, like, there's no market for it when there's not a news event. And that's tough. And especially because
I think I could have turned Jimmy Buffett has bars piece.
Because you did Hootie.
Yeah. Okay, great example.
But here's the...
But that's a great example. Do you not think that's a good example?
Of complex... Yes. But here's what I think it actually is. Again, and I'm saying in my media critic chair, because like I live in that chair sometimes. But I think it has as much to do with the generations turning over in who has the chairs and who sets
the
tone.
Oh, and being
tone.
Presented. Yes. So we're not getting writers from the 70s and 80s on Buffett. We're
correct.
Getting younger writers.
And Hootie, too. It's like a music critic who was...
Are you calling me young?
I'm calling you young. Oh. I am. I'm calling you young.
Oh, this is the best holiday present you could have given
a
me.
Critic who was you when Hootie was popping was much more likely to be derisive than somebody who marinated in it.
Shout out Jim DeRogatis.
Yeah.
In right. this, you yeah. know, like yes. like a legendary Hootie hater.
Yes. So like I think these things turn over. Like the fact that now we see Avril or Ashley Simpson as important, like that, so you know also, what I mean? Like this turns over throughout time.
And also, is this partially, and it's like, I'm going to use a word I hate to use, but is this because we live in a post-poptimism era?
Yes.
Where everything that is pop is taken seriously as important.
In part so, because it's part generational.
Right. And part of what you have to do, you're not simply saying what's happening today is important. You have to retroactively go back to what was important in the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, and 60s and say, ha. That also was important, and y'all fucked up. Y'all missed it.
And what's really fun now is that you also need the people to be like, no, 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 we were right the first time. Like, this is still trash, or this is not important. But I think, like, yeah, you can see this with artists that we do care about. And I think it's interesting, this push and this pull between legacy.
I think that that's right. I worry that this is as much of a caricature as the original shtick.
Like, but actually, Buffett was important.
That's a caricature. And Buffett's original presentation and embrace was also a form of caricature. I don't particularly like either one. My hope, and look, I don't know what the critics in the 70s were writing. Maybe there were people who took him seriously and understood the power of the thing that he was doing as a kind of social balm or whatever. People understood it in a broader socioeconomic context. The rise of the boomer relaxation, like, who knows? Maybe that exists. And if it does, and you're watching, if you wrote that stuff and you're watching Popcast Deluxe and you made it this far in the mailbag episode,
send us your academic papers, Daddy, on Jimmy Buffett.
Daddy? But I worry neither of these kinds of pieces are ultimately the things that truly define or capture what an artist was doing. We haven't talked about Steve Harwell. Regrettably, there are some people who exist in the world or whose primary artistic output exists in the world in a ironic or meme context. But sometimes in the current news ecosystem, those distinctions aren't made.
Or, like I said, that goes back to the thing where it's like now millennials are in charge of stuff. So people who know Smash Mouth songs and have had them be part of their lives in semi-meaningful ways, even if it's partially ironic, overstate yeah. his importance because it is familiar to them. Nostalgia.
I'm back to wanting to be old again.
Yeah.
Well, okay. a couple of just quick notes, and then we're going to get into this cake.
From our readers, listeners, and viewers.
Yes.
Subscribe, youtube.com/podcast.
I can't think of a better thing to do than to subscribe to YouTube at YouTube.
If you want
to
be part of this community where we play your messages or read your snarky emails
or aloud. Eat cake. Literally, let us eat cake. Okay, so Michael Sagan, just wanted to let us know that they played I Remember Everything, that's the Zach Bryan Casey Musgraves record, twice in the Hyundai of Palatine Service Center.
A cold shoulder, closing time, you begging me to stay till the sun rose.
Played it twice within 20 minutes. It was a bloodletting.
That sounds intense.
That sounds intense.
I like having some watery coffee and like a coffee cake from a vending machine.
Yeah. waiting for your like brake pads to be. First of all, as a person whose car remains in the shop, I feel this. There's no Zach Bryan being played in at my mechanic, though. So maybe I'll.
I like to imagine an AI generated photo slideshow, like from your iPhone, of you and your car set to I Remember Everything. I remember
over the years, like all the times I've taken a picture of my car as it's been like put onto the tow truck. So many. Okay. Nishad Trivedi, I apologize if I misspoke your name, said, I was listening to an old episode And I have to bring your attention to a funny exchange. We'll play the audio of this. So here's the clip.
I was actually thinking of getting a gamer chair. Because I thought maybe that would be, like, who sits in chairs longer than gamers, right?
It's John mentioning he's on the market for a gaming chair, having recently seen another featuring a, quote, Bitcoin guy down in the Bahamas vibing in front of 12 computer screens. As you may have guessed, that guy is Sam Bankman-Fried.
Wow.
I have to ask, do you remember this? And are you now the proud owner of a Secret Lab Titan Evo?
You think they're auctioning off SBF's gaming chairs?
Literally, it was just my first thing was like, they're probably selling them cheap. They're probably liquidating. I was not up on the, what's the name of the company? FTX?
Yeah.
If there was an FTX liquidation, I didn't get in on it.
Yeah.
I regret to say. I did not buy this chair, but I did Google it. It does look sturdy, looks goofy, looks nerdy. Maybe I'll still get it. I did not know that was Sam Bankman-Fried either then or up until this email, but he had his setup right for fraud.
And for those keeping score, I'm still in a metal folding chair.
Are you serious? At your house? Yeah.
I'm sitting on a metal folding chair as I have been for the last two-ish years.
Wait, that's a chair that you own? Like, that's your preferred chair?
It's just the chair at my desk.
I know this has worried people on podcasts before, but I have not.
Why is this new? This is new to me. Why is this new to me?
You just don't remember. We've talked about it.
Unbelievable.
You removed it from your mind because it's so upsetting.
That is true sicko mode.
But I have a cushion on it, which I think I've also said.
Oh, I'm going to come to your house, baby. We're going to sort you out.
It sounds like you need to sort yourself out first.
I just have a broken air on.
Don't we all?
Yeah, it's true. That's another Taylor Swift lyric. Justin Wolf. This is the last one before we get into the cake. Justin Wolf just wants me to know, as a straight cis man who does not follow sports, he really appreciates me being who I am and you playfully teasing me about it.
It's what boys are for.
Visibility. We're happy. I will say that a lot of sports happened this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't watch any of it. So this week's snack, it's exclusive. You can't get it unless you're sitting in these chairs or those chairs. Sawyer, our senior producer, I walked in today early. It's a cake staring. Look at this. It's a podcast deluxe cake.
Beautiful.
Okay, so it's themed.
Yes.
So is this for my benefit?
A few weeks ago, we had a Funfetti branded popcorn snack.
Right.
And you revealed that not only had you never had Funfetti, but you didn't know what it was.
This is popcorn with Funfetti glaze.
What is Funfetti?
Oh, this is what I was going to ask you.
And I told you that.
I was emotionally scarred.
Yeah, and I said it was sprinkle flavored cake, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And Sawyer...
Like me, grew up
on Funfetti.
And ran.
And thought that you should try it.
So there's sprinkles, there's things in the cake itself. What's the cream?
It's all Funfetti. Funfetti is the whole package.
Funfetti on top, Funfetti bun below, Funfetti socks, Funfetti draws, Funfetti shoes.
We're reviewing the box of cake, not the bake.
But can I ask a question? The colors on the inside... are like red and green and
those
pink.
Are melted sprinkles.
But like there's no red sprinkle on the top.
Sure there is.
No, they're like pink.
Ah, okay. You're right.
Like, is that just like deep cooked pink? Is it the same? I want to know, is it the same sprinkles in the batter as are on the icing?
I don't know, but I'm going to blow your mind and tell you that all sprinkles taste the same.
That's rude.
All rainbow sprinkles are the same.
Are you telling me that big sprinkle has been lying to me all these years? All right, let's get
there out. There is a difference between a chocolate sprinkle and a
that I am aware of.
It's like M&M's. Sprinkles are like M&M's.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is so sweet. My God.
You know what it tastes like?
Sugar.
Dunkaroos, which you also had for the first time on Popcast.
I think really what Popcast Deluxe is revealing is there are just certain blind spots in my childhood.
That's true. I'm a Funfetti loyalist. It's a 10 out of 10 cake. This is my ideal cake because it's for a 5-year-old.
Okay. The cake portion, super solid. Would eat over and over again. I don't totally get the sprinkle whatever the flavor of a sprinkle is.
It's just sugar.
Like, it's not crunchy. It's not, it's just exploded.
It's the vibe.
It's cooked.
It's the look.
No, it's an aesthetic.
Yeah. Funfetti is a feeling.
Okay. But I would just, you know, if anyone from Funfetti is watching, if you can get a little bit of the texture into the cake part, like I would like to have that. Mm. The icing, I'm at war with this icing.
It's regular ass vanilla icing.
No, I know, but it's so, it's literally like the tines on the fork are just like on my tongue. I'm going to go 9 on the cake part. I'm going to go like 7.5 on the icing.
So we'll average out an 8 for Funfetti.
8.25, that's actually right. The average.
Thank you. So. John, in addition to once going to London, it was also a mathlete.
You're welcome.
It's factual.
That is our show. Every episode of Popcast Deluxe. Deluxe is on youtube.com/popcast. Like and subscribe. We're here every week. We're eating cakes. We're talking about Ice Spice and Drake and Taylor and all the other fun stuff. Bottoms, you know, just anything that's happening.
That's a movie.
Every episode of Popcast across audio and video is at nytimes.com/popcast. As you've seen, an episode full of questions. Where'd we get them? We got them in the Discord, tinyurl.com/popcast Discord, tinyurl.com/popcast Facebook. That's for the Facebook group. Email us, popcast@nytimes.com. Call us on the voicemail number.
Popcast hotline.
Yeah, exactly. Subscribe to Popcast anywhere you get your audio or video content. And that can be here on youtube.com. That could be Apple. That could be Spotify or elsewhere. Our senior producer is Sawyer Roquette. Our senior chef
and producer. Our pastry chef.
Helping on the lab today is Pat Gunther. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz. Special thanks to Karen Gans, Pedro Rosado, Nell Glogley, Leslie Davis, Nina Lawson. We're out. Have a great holiday.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. It doesn't matter what job you're up against. Works, cordless power tools, and lawn equipment have the power for you to get the job done faster and easier. The PowerShare 20-volt batteries run longer on a single charge, and they can be used with other Works tools. Check out Menards' entire selection of Works cordless power tools and lawn equipment today on Menards.com. Save big.